it's day five of a marathon count. By no means the last day, as we're hearing, for the European elections. Counting still underway. So far, five MEPs elected, four in Dublin, one in Ireland South, nine more seats yet to be determined. And for the latest this evening, we're going to go to Ireland South, where our reporter Brian O'Connell is standing by. Brian, there was some talk earlier of adjourning till 9 o'clock in the morning, but could there be more action there tonight?
One more count to come, probably in about a half an hour's time. That would be count 16, Colm. So count 15 saw the elimination of Independent Ireland's Eddie Punch. He's based in County Clare. So it saw Billy Kelleher in second place move within 11,000 votes of a quota. Michael McNamara benefited then from a decent transfer from his fellow Clare-based candidate, as you'd expect. So he's in third position, just over 74,000. Not far behind him is Sinn Féin's Kathleen Funchen. She had a massive transfer of almost 16,000 in count 14. And then there's a gap of some 7,500 votes to Mick Wallace. He's about 900 votes ahead of Cynthia Niverocu. She's in sixth. And then Grace O'Sullivan remains in seventh place. So as I said, count 16 at the moment. This has seen the elimination of first-time Social Democrats candidate Susan Doyle. She's based in Cork. Put in a pretty credible performance, it'd have to be said. The Green Party here are hoping, and I have to say it's a pretty slim hope at this stage, that her distribution will benefit Grace O'Sullivan in a large way. But they feel without a substantial transfer, their hopes of retaining the seat are quite slim. Grace O'Sullivan said herself an hour or so ago at the centre here that her chances are slipping away. She made the point that in 2019 she was very transfer friendly, and this time she just hasn't been. This would, of course, leave the Green Party without any MEP in Brussels. Fianna Fáil's Billy Kelleher might expect to get some of Susan Doyle's votes given the geography, but it's not going to be enough to get him near the quota. He's going to have to wait until tomorrow to be elected at this stage. I think as well, Colm, it's worth mentioning right-wing candidate Derek Bligh, who's called for greater immigration controls. He didn't get elected in the local elections at the weekend, but he has stayed in the count here. He's outperformed the Labour candidate. He's outperformed the Social Democrats, the second Sinn Féin, and he's come close to Fine Gael's John Mullins. Both of them, Bligh and Mullins, are likely to be next eliminated after count 16. But we're going to have to wait until tomorrow morning, as the counting is expected to be suspended here once this count is complete. So what time is it now? It's nearly 10 past 10. About half past 10, I might have the results of that count for you. I think the interesting thing in this count is that if Grace O'Sullivan doesn't get a big enough transfer, perhaps her race is run.
Okay, Brian, we'll check in with you shortly. Hopefully now we're going to go to Castlebar, where the battle continues for all five seats in the Midland Northwest constituency. John Cook has nearly taken up residence there, to be fair to say. John, what's the latest?
Stop the madness, Colm. That's the campaign slogan, of course, of former Dragon's Den entrepreneur and presidential candidate Peter Casey. But we've all been saying stop the madness many times since his elimination on the 14th count here in Midlands Northwest. Casey wasn't seen here in Castlebar this time round, but he had tweeted to thank supporters, saying those stop the madness posters would soon be taken down, and never seen again. He said he'd never put up posters again. And whether that means we've seen the last of Peter Casey in elections remains to be seen. Earlier today, I spoke to former Green candidate, she ran as an independent this time round, Saoirse McHugh, who called Casey a clown during the RTE debates this time round. She's just been eliminated on count number 15. And she spoke to me about the difficulty of getting elected in a contest, a constituency of 15 counties, 1.8 million people, where celebrities' names seem to triumph based on their recognition with voters. Having canvassed from her native Achill Island to Leixlip in Kildare, she said there has to be a better way to divide the Euro constituencies. And the issues for voters east and west are often very different. But is there a better way? I wonder if your panel would have an idea on this, Colm, to run these European elections or to count these votes. That's eliminated 16 of the 27 candidates here so far in Castlebar. One listener has been sending me messages to say there should have been two semi-finals for candidates first to get the numbers down, like the Eurovision. So maybe that's one to think about. But for now, it's back to the count, with poll topper Luke Ming Flanagan calling a definite top four in Castlebar, including himself and the Dancing with the Stars jockey Nina Carberry, who's yet to ride into town. Fine Gael's Rosa Tralee Maria Walsh, as well as the Laois Offaly TD and former Taoiseach's brother, Barry Cowan. Flanagan said that his sample tally said you could still see Sinn Féin's Michelle Gildernew ahead of Kieran Mullooly with Lisa Chambers votes left to transfer. How would that go? Well, we don't know, but after count 15, I can tell you Mullooly's on 68,663. The gap widening between himself and Michelle Gildernew, 17,409 votes between them. She's on 51,254. We have Pather Tobin of Aintho, 53,222 ahead of Gildernew. Lisa Chambers, 48,578 votes. And right now, the next count, count 16, will distribute Saoirse McHugh's 31,519 votes. The next ones will be significant because we're waiting to see how that'll go and whether we'll see the elimination next of Fianna Fáil's Niall Blaney with 33,598 votes or Sinn Féin's Chris McManus, the outgoing MEP, 33,616 votes. So we're getting through them, Colm. It's still some time to go, but certainly it's about to get very interesting here in Castlebar.
All right. I'm not going to quite say nearly there, but you're getting there. You're getting there.
Don't.
John. You can do it, John. We believe in you.
And I'd probably I'd be
sure to put those questions to the panel. John Cook, thanks very much. As I say, we are joined in studio. I better reintroduce the panel because it's been a while since we heard. Malcolm Byrne, Fianna Fáil Senator, Daithí Doolan, Sinn Féin candidate in the recent Dublin constituency for the European Parliament election, and Dublin City Councillor Marian Harkin, Independent TD for Sligo Leitrim, and Hugh O'Connell, political editor with the Sunday Times. Hugh, to you first. First to the Midlands Northwest constituency we've just heard there. It's very hard to call it, isn't it? Even within the voting, Niall Blaney's votes could go anyway. They may not even favour his Fianna Fáil running mates.
Well, no, I mean, just on him, I guess, the very fact that he was so agitated by the lack of support from party headquarters and particularly the leader over the course of the campaign, you couldn't really rely necessarily on the sort of discipline in terms of vote transfers that there has been in Sinn Féin, for example. But I would defer to Marian on this because she seems to have a good sense of which way it's going in Midlands Northwest.
All right. Okay, Marian.
You seem pretty clear, Marian, on what... what's going to happen?
She's taking pages out. She's shuffling
so folders.
I see screen grabs there as well. What would you say to that, Marian Harkin? That you know, the Niall Blaney vote. I mean, the Blaney vote before was an independent Fianna Fáil vote, possibly more Republican than the rest of Fianna Fáil. There's a chance that some of his transfers might transfer in Sinn Féin's direction.
Yeah, but not in the numbers required. I mean, earlier today I looked at it. Luachmhainn Flanagan did a number of tallies of number twos across the board. And, you know, about four or five rounds back, it looked as if Gildernew certainly would pass Mullooly with the transfers from Chris McManus, but then it would be down to Tobin's vote and Chambers. But 10%, according to the tallies, of Tobin's vote is going to Mullooly, and about 9% John Waters. John is gone, so you move on to the next one. But only about 4, 5, 6% is going between the two Sinn Féin candidates. So I think it's over at this stage. Mullooly, on almost every count, is just getting more votes than Sinn Féin, and that's where the battle is.
And having run not quite in this constituency, but an analogous constituency yourself
this constituency,
as an independent. But what's the fortunes of an independent like in terms of being transfer friendly like that? Because in some cases, people who vote left might vote down and meet Ciarán Mullooly in the middle. People who vote right might vote from the top, and Ciarán Mullooly's in the middle every time.
Well, Ciarán Mullooly was in most people's living rooms for many years, so people know him. And recognition is huge. And I would say, like Chris McManus, for example, did not run in the last European election. So his name wasn't, it was in Sligo, but it wasn't on a ballot paper in Westmeath or Kildare. So he didn't have the visibility. And remember, we had 2 years of COVID, so it was hard for people to get visibility. Michelle Gildernew is not a household name. And the truth is, you look at results and knowing the candidate, not even knowing them well, but knowing who they are or having heard their name, really, really matters. And if you look at the way the transfers are going, you can see that each time Mullooly is just getting that bit more than Sinn Féin. And despite the fact that I think Chris McManus might transfer 18,000 votes, maybe even 19, up to 20 to Gildernew, I still think she may even just pass him, but on Tobin's transfers, he will take the lead. Now, the one I don't know is Lisa Chambers' transfers, and that's just not sure where that'll go. But there is no reason to believe it's more likely to go Sinn Féin than Mullooly.
Okay. Sorry, and what I meant to say is that the addition of two, it is the same constituency, but with the addition of two counties. I just want to go to Dáithí Doolan on this first. So, Dáithí Doolan, you've heard Marian Harkins' analysis there. A two-candidate strategy in this constituency, was it the wrong strategy, or possibly were they the wrong candidates?
No, absolutely not. I mean, Chris has been an outstanding MEP, and you're right, he was badly hit by COVID in the sense of he wasn't able to participate like a public representative could or should. I think Michelle Gildernew is held in high regard across the country for her role in the Stormont Assembly as the Minister for Agriculture. I think I'm expecting him to transfer 20,000 to Michelle. She's back in the running. That's a 60% transfer. Down the south, you have Kathleen Funchin, who looks like she's taking a seat. We could have an MEP in each of the constituencies.
But
you see, you're asking a question. We don't know the outcome yet, so I'm not going to predict the future. I'm dealing with the facts as they're presented
going back to first preferences. Sinn Féin had a very good local election in Monaghan. I think there were 8 local councillors elected in Monaghan. The first preferences for Michelle Gildernew in the constituency don't reflect local election returns like that. So I suppose the question is, while she was recognisable from her period with the agriculture portfolio in the Stormont Assembly and her time as an MP, did she have the wider constituency name recognition that would have been required?
Well, I think we'll be having a very different debate if she takes a seat, of course. But let's wait and see. No, nobody here has a crystal ball, as far as I know. We might have the facts in front of me that Chris will transfer very well to her. At least 60%. We've been transferring usually about 70% in this election, which is quite good for any party's discipline. I think she ran an excellent campaign. I'll take your word for it, that the local vote didn't transfer to her, and that's a challenge for us. But she ran an excellent campaign. We ran 2 excellent candidates. We were pushing the envelope out. We did not want to leave any seat behind. We ran an excellent local election campaign. We didn't want to leave any seat behind. We're up for the challenges that lie ahead. We didn't have a great day. We're mature enough and humble enough to realise we didn't have a great day, but that wasn't the day. We will have better days ahead, that's without a doubt.
Sure, okay.
When you compare it to the government parties, all their votes went down. The Greens might return with no MEPs. We're going to return perhaps with 3 and an increased representation of Dublin City Council.
We'll get to both general election and local elections, and indeed to Ireland South in a moment. But Malcolm Byrne, what have you got to tell us about Midlands North West? Number of Fianna Fáil candidates won, the genius strategy of putting candidates in fearsome competition with each other to try and maximise the votes. The appearance of an underdog within the party ticket who resented how he was being treated. I mean, it provided theatre, but is it going to result in seats?
Well, I think it is going to result in seats. And
seats plural?
Well, it's certainly going to result, no, it will result in a seat for Barry Cowan. And as Marion will know, because she was the one who broke Fianna Fáil hearts, in terms of costing Fianna Fáil a seat, or she narrowly defeated Pat the Cope Gallagher previously. It's been 15 years since a Fianna Fáil candidate has won a seat in Midlands North West. So it is very welcome, the fact that Barry is on course to win a seat. I think, in fairness to both Lisa Chambers and Niall Blaney, they both polled well. We went into this election with 2 MEPs, Billy Kelleher and Barry Andrews.
Just stick to Midlands North West. What was the strategy here? Because Barry Cowan, high profile, TD, obviously Lisa Chambers in the Shannon. Niall Blaney, though, you know, it wasn't clear what the criteria were. Barry Cowan won the convention. And then there was a kind of a Camogli approach to additions to the ticket.
I think the case that Niall made was that, look, he finished second in the convention. He made a strong argument around, you know, a border county candidate, given that Lisa was coming from Mayo, Barry was coming from the Midlands. And I think a factor in these elections is certainly geography. I mean, I think, you know, there's...
That's a wise strategy. If he transfers heavily to his colleagues,
let me use the example of, for instance, Ireland South, and I, as you know, I ran in 2019 in Ireland South, and on that occasion, Fine Gael ran a three candidate strategy where they had Sean Kelly, Deirdre Clune, and they ran Andrew Doyle in the eastern side of the constituency. That helped to get them two seats. This time, on this occasion, they've run two candidates in Ireland South. They've actually ended up with more votes than Fianna Fáil, yet we're in with a shot, a real shot for two seats in Ireland South.
All right.
Had the strategy worked and had it, you know, pulled off, been able to pull off, you could have seen a situation whereby we could have been challenging for two seats. I think it's going to be,
two independents, two Fine Gaelers and a Fianna Fáil or Marian Harkin. That's the call, is it?
Well, I think so, because I'm looking here at a tally of Blaney's votes. You asked me that earlier. And according to the tally I've seen, now this is rough, but it won't be too far out. Chambers getting about 27 and Cowan 16 and Carberry is coming in third at 10.
Right, OK.
So you can see that the vote is transferring, you know, about 40+% and very little of it going the way of Sinn Féin. Very little to Mullooly either, so I don't think his transfers will materially affect the outcome.
All right, we might come back to the issue of intergovernment transfers between the two larger parties, but Hugh, having a look there at Ireland South and the way that's gone, what Malcolm Byrne was talking about the previous time around, Fine Gael would be looking at themselves and kicking themselves at the strategy perhaps that they run. There may have been another seat there for the taking, but their geographic strategy was just wrong.
I think it's pretty clear, given the number of votes that Sean Kelly got, that there was a second seat there for Fine Gael if they managed the vote a bit better and if they had a better geographical spread. I mean, ultimately, you got John Mullins in Cork, you got Sean Kelly, obviously, you know, Kerry, but obviously all around as well. No one on the East Coast. And there was a strong argument for Fine Gael running a candidate from the East Coast, just as Malcolm said, as they did in 2019, where Andrew Doyle was the sweeper candidate. And they ran, in 2014, they ran Simon Harris on the East Coast. And he nearly got elected.
Sure, and Sinn Féin's strategy in this election seems to be paying off reasonably well.
Kathleen Funchen contributed massively to getting Lynn elected in Dublin. And, you know, equally, Kathleen Funchen in Ireland South is going to get elected off the back of Paul Gavin. So, like, you know, running more than one candidate or sometimes running three candidates can work, but you have to manage it properly. And in Fine Gael's case in Ireland South, they didn't. They put John Mullins in from Cork because there was a belief that you had to have a candidate in Cork, particularly Deirdre Clune retiring. Fine Gael, Cork, Simon Coveney, the Merchant Prince, all this kind of stuff you've been hearing over the last few days. But it didn't work. And really, this is a dry run for John Mullins to run, I would say, either in Cork East in the general election, where David Stanton is standing down, or perhaps in Cork South Central if Simon Coveney doesn't run again.
All right, I was listening to Kevin Cunningham, Daithi Doolan, during the course of the election campaign, and what he was talking about was party loyalty amongst Sinn Féin voters, candidate loyalty amongst Fianna Fáil voters. So potential voters were asked, if this candidate was in another party, would you still vote for them? Fianna Fáil voters tended to say they would vote for that candidate in another party. Sinn Féin voters said no, there was massive party loyalty by contrast. But that really seems to have paid off in terms of sweeper candidates in the three constituencies for you in Dublin, passing votes to Lynn Boylan. It seems to be working out well in Ireland South, and whether it gets Michelle Gildernew elected or not. And you can argue the toss there with Marian Harkin about that, but the rate of transfer has been good.
I think we ran an excellent campaign in Dublin. It was a very positive change, positive politics, And I think it really, really worked out last night. I was delighted to play a part on it. The analogy I would use is like it was a mountain to climb for me, and I was happy to be on the mountain climbing. And when I was eliminated, it was like political reincarnation.
You're
I was
like a Sherpa.
I was eliminated, and my votes were able to carry Lynn over time. We have a fantastic candidate who we can be proud of. And in the South, I reckon Kathleen Funch will take it, and Paul Gavin, an excellent senator from Limerick, and I think he contributed massively to it. And we've noticed that voter transfer discipline in the locals as well, that we got seats because of the transfer between like with Maura Devine in Southwest Inner City and other areas where the second and third candidates transferred unbelievably to the Sinn Féin candidate. And also we're now more transfer friendly. We noticed that in the local elections as well, those days of not transferring.
And in South, you'd be hopeful, is it, of getting some votes from Susan Doyle and some really from Grace O'Sullivan when
I think you notice as well.
Is that where you're looking for your votes?
I think we're also looking at a really good informal left-wing pact whereby the votes are staying on the left. We saw that yesterday with Eoghan Reardon getting the fourth seat, where you could see almost right down it was number one, number two, number three, number four, keeping it on the left. And that's very positive. And I think that is prevented some of the more far right racist candidates getting elected. And when we look across Europe, that's a good day for politics in Ireland. And I'm really, really proud of the campaign we ran. I'm really proud of the fact we brought positive politics to every door in the 26 counties. And I think it's bearing fruit in Europe, insofar as we went into this with one MEP. We could be coming out of close of business with three MEPs. That's a good day's work. Our vote went up. Our number of seats went up at local level. Our sleeves are rolled up. We're back in action since Monday. And that's the sort of politics that we are. Our communities still need us. They still want us. And we're in there working for change. And that's what we're about. And that's what we're prepared for. And that's what we're saying to the government: bring on the election, we're ready for it. The election that just happened, that was not our high point. We're humble enough to recognise that, and there's better days for us to come. But as far as the government parties, down in numbers, down in percentages, and we need to get Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael out of central government. It didn't happen at the weekend in local government, but I'm absolutely sure it will happen if we're given a general election as soon as possible.
Okay, I just want to run through count 15 in Midlands Northwest there, just to bring the listeners up to speed. So Luke Ming Flanagan, 95,314. Nina Carberry, 80,364. Maria Walsh, 79,310. Barry Cowan, 78,208. Kieran Mullooly, 68,663. Padraig Tobin, 53,222. Michelle Gildernew, 51,254. Lisa Chambers, 48,578. Niall Blaney, 33,598. And Chris McManus, 33,616. So that's just the figures coming out from those counts.
Even believing in that, depending obviously on party transfers, it is conceivable in that Lisa Chambers could even remain ahead and go ahead of Michelle Gildernew, depending on the
She won't.
It's unlikely, but
it's impossible.
Because Niall Blaney has still to go out. If
but Blaney's vote.
Okay. We'll give you an easier toss to argue in Ireland South there, Malcolm Byrne.
It's not even optimism.
I know. It's not. I'm clutching at straws. I'm going to
Cynthia Ní Bhfiorchú.
Cynthia Ní Bhfiorchú is. And I suppose this was, I mean, one of the most bizarre questions I thought was during the primetime pre-election debate was when Billy Kedder was asked, was he unhappy with the two candidate strategy in Ireland South? And, you know, it was very clear there was always going to be a two candidate strategy. There was a very clear divide between Cynthia and Billy. It was acknowledged that Billy would be canvassing in Cork, Kerry and Limerick.
So where are her votes going to come from now? Because below her are
John Mullins from Fine Gael,
and also potentially
Derek Blythe. We don't know where they are in first votes. They probably won't be going to government parties. I suspect of them, because they're tending to go to independent candidates.
Potentially Mick Wallace.
Well, Michael McNamara is also still there, who could pick up a significant number of votes. Whether that will make a material difference would be interesting. After that, you're into John Mullins, the second Fine Gael candidate. There's no other Fine Gael candidate in the field. Billy Kelleher may or may not be elected. So you're probably going to see a benefit there to either Grace O'Sullivan or Cynthia Ní Bheadh Chu ahead of ahead of Mick Wallace.
Which is a good jumping in point, Hugh O'Connell, for the inter Fianna Fáil Fine Gael, which is not just seen in these elections, it's also across the local elections as well. There was high transfer rates between both parties to their mutual benefit.
There was, yeah. No, I mean, I've been saying it all weekend. I think one of the big stories of this election is, you know, the big story has been the focus on Sinn Féin. But what is really interesting, I think, is the degree to which Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are now a unit forever, potentially, up to and including them becoming the same party at some point, I think. I was discussing it with a Fianna Fáil TD today who reckoned in maybe 15 years, you know. So... and that is something I think that is going to become a feature of future elections now. They're going to be, you know, in 2019, they were still pretending that they were in against each other. Fianna Fáil were in opposition, although confidence and supply. Now you see that they are transferring to each other very heavily. You're seeing that they both came in at around 23%. They had this kind of phony row about who's going to get the most seats, and Fianna Fáil have come out on top by three.
It's not a phony row coming into the general election, though, is it? When both people are looking to who's going to lead the government, where are you getting your second seat in a constituency?
But I think what we're seeing is that voters are seeing them as one electoral
unit. Absolutely. I think you're right.
Hold on. If you look at, as I said, Blaney's votes, they're really instructive. A Donegal vote and so little of it going to Sinn Féin, and the bulk of it going towards government candidates. Even Nina Carberry, who's so far away, and Maria Walsh, you know, if those tallies are accurate, and I expect they are, it just shows you that cohesion that there is there.
Yeah. I think, on that point, was that during the debates, it was apparent when Regina Doherty was saying about the transfers to Fianna Fáil, you vote Fine Gael, you get Fianna Fáil, you vote Fianna Fáil, you get Fine Gael. And this phony argument, or the argument between Fianna Gael and the Greens.
Let Doherty Doolan finish the point. Then I'll go to Hugh O'Connell and then Malcolm Byrne.
Let's focus on the facts that you can see that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are operating as a unit. And you can see that this division now, this internal rank with the Greens trying to make them the mudguarder, it's time they had a general election, got them out of power, and may bring in change. That's what needs to happen.
So I can finish my point, which was exactly what I was going to say about what Doherty kind of said, is that most of the election, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were attacking the Greens. They weren't attacking each other, though. That's the point. So, really, that's where that's where this kind of post-election conflict is coming.
There was no margin in attacking each other, though, was there? There was margin in attacking the Greens, and you can see that from the amount of independence.
Yeah, and so Eamon Ryan has said publicly he wasn't really happy about that. He raised it with the leaders, the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael leaders, on Monday night at their usual leaders' meeting, and said that he hoped it wouldn't happen again. But it will absolutely happen again. And I think you're going to see more of it in the run-up.
You're
going to
get up
to
a bit of that, Malcolm.
And now, Malcolm,
bit of green kicking, are you?
Well, we've already had two party political broadcasts from Doherty.
So you're taking a deep breath now.
Well, we're political representatives, with all due respect. That's our job, to be political.
And if I can speak in terms of, there are differences between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. The two parties do work well in government. I think one of the questions that people will be looking at is if and when the general election happens, is who is going to form the next government. And it's going to be essential that we have political parties who can cooperate and who can work together and who can go out there and sell a positive message and a message of delivery.
I do want to finish this, because
we've had a number of things pointed about Fianna Fáil. The difference has been that rather than spend the whole time saying, we want an election, we went out with a very positive message. We did, and I accept during an election, you know, there'll always be a few throwaway remarks, but as a general rule, our candidates went out and said, here's what we've been able to achieve in government.
Lisa Chambers had a right old go at the Greens about their wind power strategy. Regina Doherty had a go at them about cycle lanes and seemed to be intimating that not only were the Greens doing things the wrong way, but that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil had better ideas on how to achieve green outcomes and being better able to bring people along with them. So if that's not having a go...
So you're going to have that during an election campaign. campaign, right? And I'm not, anyone who pretends otherwise, and you will see that. And I have, and in the same way as you would have seen the Soc Dems and Labour have a go at each other.
You began your contribution by saying we ran a very positive campaign. But there was a negative component to it, wasn't there?
From individual candidates. But if you look at the message that we went out with,
I didn't hear
local
party headquarters shutting them down.
In the local.
Were they reprimanded during the election? Were they told not to say it again?
Colm, I appreciate that you like interrupting me, right? But I do want to make the point. In the local election, we ran a very strong campaign around effective local councillors, and where somebody was, you know, an incumbent who had been elected 5 years ago, who worked hard, he or she tended to get elected. We are very conscious that we lost councillors, and that was a difficulty in the election. We're humble enough to recognise that fact. But the message that came from the local elections and the European elections is when you have strong candidates who can deliver positive messages on issues like investing in housing and health and education, as this government has been doing, people respond to it.
But they don't respond to,
we need a general election, we need a general election. And what would you do if in government? Will we propose
I want to put one specific question, and then I want to come to Marion Harkin, because the question I'm going to ask you relates to her. That's fine, but you're now in competition with Fine Gael. You're the largest parties, respectively, in local government. And you'll want to have people, TDs elected, and you'll want to bring in running mates. You can either do that at the expense of the other, or you can do it at the expense of independence. And if you want to do it at the expense of independence, it's hard to see how there won't be more green kicking between now and the general election.
Well, I think the question that will need to be put to every independent candidate is, who are you going to vote for, Taoiseach, after the next election? Because people will want to know, if there's a general election, a government.
Sure, come on. We know what the answer to that is. Every single independent candidate would say, we'll look at what our constituents want. Mm. We'll drive the hardest bargain possible. We'll bring the shopping list thing, and the negotiations will fall where they were, and we are best placed to represent our constituency.
But I think people will want to know, you know, who is going to be Taoiseach after the next election? Who will they line?
You can't know that beforehand. Mm. And seeing that there are so many party political broadcasts.
So you'll vote for Micheál Martin then after the next election.
Wait,
can you say I'll even run in the next election, let alone...
Or Micheál Martin may not even get elected.
Yeah, so forget about that. But just one sentence on the party political broadcast.
Will you run in the next election?
My intention of now is yes.
Okay.
But the independent vote increased by 2.5%, and of course Independent Ireland took 2.8% of an increase, so certainly that vote is on the increase. It's not stratospheric, but it's moving up. So I think, what was your question to me after all that? Malcolm interrupted me and my train of thought is all over the place at this stage.
How do you expect the behaviour of government to be towards independence from here on in? And I suppose, to what degree can we even talk about independence as a group about which you can use a blanket term?
There's two things there, and I'll answer the second one first. They are not a blanket group. They can be quite disparate indeed, and there's no such thing as the independence in the sense of, you know, Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, but in the sense of, will they attack independence? Of course they will. And not only the government, but Sinn Féin will, and other parties will, because they will see that in many cases as their best chance of knocking out independence to get a seat for themselves. So I think in the next election, independence will come under significant pressure. But my sense is that many of them will be well able to withstand it.
But one of the things that a lot of independents do have in common is there has been a lot of criticism of the Greens from large parts of independents as well, hasn't there? Even in running in these European elections. Why is that?
Well, if you look, I suppose, at Midlands North West, I didn't really hear much from Ming or Kieran Mullooly in that regard. There might have been some. I didn't hear it from Michael McNamara.
Was it not implicit in Kieran Mullooly's just transition, and that the pro-agriculture message tends to be...
But pro-agriculture is not anti-green.
Pro-agriculture tends to be framed as the farmers are the custodians of the land, they know best. And in brackets,
well,
after that is the implicit,
is whatever,
don't be introducing any more regulations.
It wasn't nearly as virulent as some of the other messages were you know, from
certainly not as explicit.
No, certainly not.
What about Niall Boylan, who was prominent independent in Dublin, who was very anti-green and very anti-immigrant?
Yes, indeed. But he's not an independent. He's a member of Independent Ireland.
The same party as Ciarán Mullooly.
Yes, yeah. I'm not disputing.
Although Ciarán Mullooly did say that he didn't agree with everything that Niall Boylan said.
Because that's the issue with independence. You don't know what you're voting for. You don't know who you're voting for. No, with all due respect, you had a few minutes.
They are a party.
But let me finish.
You can't confuse two things.
No. If you let me finish, maybe I can clarify it.
Yeah, but no, I don't need to clarify.
Okay, all right, okay. One voice at a time. Okay, so just one voice. Independent Ireland are categorised under the others.
What I need to clarify. Yeah. Independence, you don't know what you're voting for. They go from left to right in the middle. But when you're voting for a political party, at least you know
from
what you're getting.
From a party that has flip-flopped
Okay.
We were very definite, very clear. Let me finish, please. Let me finish. I've been sitting here quite patient listening to you.
Don't interrupt him. Let him finish.
Please, thank you. When you're voting for the independence, you don't know what you're voting for. It's left to right and everything in the middle. It's like a packet of licorice all sorts. But at least with political parties, you know what you're getting. You know the policy. You have a leadership, and there's a party line in place.
Can I put something to you then? It was something that a party colleague of yours in County Laois said. He said that we're supposed to be the main opposition parties. This is Aidan Mullins from Laois County Council. We're supposed to be the main opposition party, but for the big issues that come around on people's minds during the year, we didn't provide much opposition. There's a number of issues that came up on the doorstep that accounts for the reluctance to stay with us. And the three primary issues I felt were, number one, the whole area of immigration, which we didn't take a firm stance on policy-wise for a while. That message and the message came back to the doorstep was, there's no opposition to government's policies. The second one was support of the two referendums. Now, there's a party colleague of yours who seems to indicate that the electorate in his area told him they did not know what they were voting for when they were called on to provide Sinn Féin with votes.
Well, absolutely, he's entitled to his view, and there is different views within the party. But we do have a party line, we have party policies. We launched our local government manifesto. We launched our European manifesto. They were the cornerstones for our campaign. People are entitled to their views, but we have policies and positions.
Marion Harkin,
and just let me finish on specifically on that. We took a very clear line on immigration and the asylum seeking process. We took a very clear line on the referendum. But there is frustration, there is anger out there after 4 years of us receiving the largest vote that we've ever received. The change hasn't happened, and people are angry and frustrated at the government. We understand that, we've heard it, and we're responding to it.
Okay, Marion Harkin, the allegation was made there by Dáithí Doolan that people don't know what they're voting for when they vote for an independent.
Well, obviously he's saying that the electorate got it wrong in the last election because independents scored the highest. But when an independent goes forward the same as anybody else, your policies are examined, you're questioned, you're certainly in the same position as every other candidate. And many independents are there quite a while. So people do know how they vote and what their views are. But when it comes to something like voting for a Taoiseach, my response to that is the people decide. The largest party are the party that would normally lead negotiations. If they then are the only grouping that can form a government, then you have to look at that.
And do you mind me asking, how does that then work? You've been elected, you know, on your personal record. Does your electorate or your constituency then leave it to your discretion to decide, or do you go back and consult with party workers and voters in a canvas type arrangement to try and find out what the feeling is about supporting any party?
No, I certainly would talk to supporters, people I know, absolutely, about that. But at the end of the day, it's the people who make the decision who the largest party is. They normally lead negotiations. If they're successful, then that is the grouping that will form the next government. If they are not, you've got to look at alternatives. So you can't look into the future and say what you'll do, because that's not possible for anyone. I mean, obviously, Dáithí can say he will vote for the Sinn Féin candidate and Malcolm will vote for the Fianna Fáil candidate. I will vote for the candidate that the people decide, you know, whatever grouping gets the highest votes that can form a government.
That's okay. Very clear. And I think, is that the view of all independents or just you?
That's
the whole thing. But that's only with independents.
I can only ask Marion Harkin to account for herself. Hugh O'Connell, what do we know after the local elections. Now, Sinn Féin, you know, as Dahi has argued since the start of the programme, increased its vote by, you know, a considerable amount. If you're to do it in percentage terms, they're up about 30% on where they were in 2019. But other parties are down. But that's not the narrative coming out of the election in terms of where party morale is.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, and I think it's primarily because the agenda has been dictated by what happened in 2020, but also opinion polls since then. And, you know, in defence of opinion polls, which have been getting a right old kicking, particularly from Fianna Fáil over the last few days, I mean, they did spot the fact that, and they did see that Sinn Féin had been sliding since last summer, not to the level that they're at right now, that they recorded in the election. But, you know, there was a slide, and you could see that they slid quite dramatically from the high 20s down to the low 20s in the week during the election campaign. So there was clearly something going on there. And equally, Fine Gael's results is quite close in the local elections, is quite close to where the opinion polls had them. Fianna Fáil is the anomaly, and I don't think we should necessarily get into a debate around that. But we should also take account of the fact that those opinion polls ask people their voting intention in a general election. Mm. That doesn't take account of local elections, where the factors are much different. It's candidates, it's quality of councillors, you know, incumbency matters, which you know a lot of people have been talking about over the last few days. And so you can also see that, you know, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are embedded within communities to a much greater extent than Sinn Féin are. Sinn Féin have good community organisations all around the country, but not to the same extent that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have.
I want to let Dáil Dúnan respond to that, because just to quote another party member, I think it was actually somebody who's local enough to yourself, Sinn Féin councillor William Carey, said that the problem wasn't so much just running candidates and splitting votes, that the capacity wasn't there in the logistical organisation behind them to be able to conduct widespread canvasses and for the machine effectively to roll out behind the candidates. Would you accept that?
Well, I mean, if you're going to run more candidates, you spread your resources. That's the logic. And we ran over 351 candidates, I believe, the most we've ever stood, because we were ambitious, and ambitious for our communities and ambitious for the country. And of course, that meant whatever resources you had were spread much, much thinner, particularly when you compare it to a general election, when you've one candidate, maybe two, at best three in a general election area. We were running one, two, three, and four. And
is the solution pretty simple then, in your view, that you will have a greater logistical effort spread less thinly among fewer candidates, and therefore problem solved?
Well, it's not just problem solved. I mean, it's all about the politics as well. And what I was out canvassing morning, noon and night for 6 months. I was canvassing from groups from 3 up to 40. It was a real 32 county effort. We had teams down from Belfast and Derry. It was great to have them down to share the workload, because that's what it's about. We'll be heading up there to support them. But the issue was, for the rest of the week, we'd a lot more candidates. Of course, you're spreading the resources, and that was a huge challenge to us. We've taken that on board. We didn't have the best day out. We're humble enough, big enough and brave enough to acknowledge that, and to make sure next time that we're going to run a far more effective campaign, better campaign, and take the government out, because it'll be a very different. I think the opinion polls are very interesting. I think you're absolutely right, because when you go up to somebody in the street and you say, who will you vote for next government? It's a simple answer. But when you're in the local elections, it's really, really difficult to mobilise them to the extent of 50, 60, 65%. And particularly in our base areas, that we've recognised in the last two elections, is that mobilising working class communities who are angry, frustrated and a bit apathetic following the general election, it's even more effort to mobilise. There's even more effort to mobilise those people who need a change most, and that's a challenge for us.
I just want to let Malcolm Byrne in, and then I'll come back to you, Hugh O'Connell. Yeah.
I think it is the case with opinion polls that Fianna Fáil has always been underestimated in some of the opinion polls. Our concern on it, and I get Hugh's point that during the course of a campaign things can change, but part of the difficulty can sometimes be about how opinion polls shape news stories. So if, you know, the story has always been Fianna Fáil is in trouble and Fianna Fáil
is falling behind. Well, the editorial policy generally is don't lead with a poll. And don't get overexcited if it's not a trend.
It has a lot of the time. I think I do totally accept that, you know, local and European elections are totally different to a general election. The campaign will matter. And I think, you know, we saw the difference between the 2019 local and European elections, which the local elections in particular were very good. Okay. And the 2020.
Just hold that thought, Hugh O'Connell, because we are getting it. There's another count in Cork. We're just going to go to Brian O'Connell now. We don't have the live feed, but Brian's going to just summarise how people have fared in that count. Brian, the floor is yours.
Yes, good evening, Cavan. Count 16, which was Susan Doyle's elimination, the Social Democrats candidate, first-time candidate for Cork. And in this, so we had Billy Kelleher is up to 106,051. I suppose Kathleen Funchen did quite well, 4,616. I mean, that's a bit of a bump that Sinn Féin probably weren't expecting. It has moved her up into third position, overtaking Michael McNamara. She's on 76,697. She goes just in ahead of Michael McNamara in third. He drops back down to fourth. And then Mick Wallace got 2,509, so he remains in fifth. Cynthia Nvuruku, 1,821. Sorry, Grace O'Sullivan, 7,675. So I was saying to you before this count that the Green Party really needed a significant transfer from Social Democrats Susan Doyle to have any chance of retaining the seat that she won in 2019. It brings her up to 63,335. Not sure that would be enough at this stage to stay in the hunt for that fifth seat possibly. So the plan here now is, you can probably hear in the background, the counting staff are just leaving the hall. It's counting is suspended here. We come back tomorrow morning where Derek Bligh in count 17 will be eliminated. Where his votes go, I mean, will be quite interesting. I mean, it's very hard to ascertain. Perhaps some of them might go towards Mick Wallace, but people really don't know. I mean, votes on the right have been transferring left and votes on the left have been transferring right, so it's very difficult to try and figure out where the chunk of them will go and whether they'll make a material difference.
All right. Thanks very much, Brian, and safe home. And no doubt we'll be talking again tomorrow. Hugh O'Connell, yes. You're in the middle of something there. Give us your reaction to that as well when you finished.
Point I was going to make was that I have got the sense to speak to people in Sinn Féin this week that there was a problem getting their vote out this election, that people who would have voted for them in the last general election they didn't come out this election, didn't want to vote, they didn't think it was important. There was lots of reasons why they didn't get out that vote. So that's a big challenge for Sinn Féin. I imagine, given the number of candidates they ran and the stretch to the resources within a constituency that had, it was harder to get people out. So that's something I think that they'll have to work on in advance of the next election. And just on Malcolm's point in relation to the opinion polls, I mean, I've heard Fianna Fáil politicians since the weekend say that the entire news agenda has been set by poor Fianna Fáil poll ratings that are at odds with the facts. That's not true at all. Most of the coverage of opinion polls over the last 4 years has focused on the fact that Sinn Féin have been in the ascendancy for much of that time. They were up in the mid to high 30s. And their general election opinion polls. And they showed consistently Sinn Féin polling really high, well above the coalition parties. And obviously the story of the last year has been Sinn Féin's decline. No one's really spent a lot of time focusing on Fianna Fáil at that
point. Most of the newspaper's headlines were that, but it needs to also be recognised that this election was our second best local election ever. So if you compare 19 to 20, we had a really good general election. The next general election will even be better. Yeah, just from the baseline we're starting on.
I agree that you can't look at a general election based on these figures. You just can't. Okay. Because from this small bit of experience I've had going around canvassing for local candidates, local matters, individuals matter, incumbency matters, and all of that is a very different picture to asking somebody to vote for government. And
which brings us neatly on to general elections. Very briefly, Hugh, political correspondents in the country seem to be treating government assurances that there won't be a general election until next February or March with all the seriousness the CIA treated Putin's assurances that he wouldn't invade Ukraine.
That's some comparison.
There is some comparison, yeah. I was just taking a moment to think about that one. Yeah, look, I mean, my view has always been that this government would probably run the full term and the election probably wouldn't be till the spring of 2025. But just looking at it now, you know, the logistics of running by-elections, you know, a few weeks or a few months before a general election, it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. And when I think of, I mean, Malcolm knows all about this, elected to the Dáil in November 2019, losing his seat in February 2020, and those by-elections gave Sinn Féin a lot of momentum going into that general election. Midwest, they got a second seat there through Mark Ward.
Well, Malcolm Byrne on so that.
I, I, sorry, just to, yeah, sorry, to close out the loop. I think it's probably more likely than not that there'll be an election this year. And if I was to have a bet, which I don't because I don't bet, but it would probably be late October, early November.
Yeah. Okay. In the abstract, Malcolm Byrne, let's go theoretical on this because you obviously are, you know, your party leader and the coalition leaders have said indeed that it's going to run the full distance. But when you look at the number of TDs that are going to be elected and the number of by-elections that are going to have to be run, it's a very high risk, isn't it, that you could have the opposition ganging up in constituencies and chipping away at government TDs, dominoes falling one by one and completely changing the dynamics in the lead-in to a general election.
It is. Can I just comment on the Ireland South issue first? Because I do think it's now looking very unlikely Grace O'Sullivan will be.
I just run through the figures as they stand at the moment. So Billy Keller is on 106,000 at 51. Kathleen Funchin, 76,000, nearly 76,000, 700 basically.
She will take a seat.
Michael McNamara, 75,570. Cynthia Nivoruchu, 65,361. Sorry, Mick Wallace slightly ahead of her, 67,146. And then Grace O'Sullivan is on 63,335. Go on, sorry.
I just to say, because I appreciate Derek Bligh's going out, that is unlikely to favour the Green Party in terms of transfers. And I can't see a significant enough transfer from John Mullins. And I just want to say, in the case of both Grace O'Sullivan and Kieran Cuff, regardless of what you think about their policies, they were both excellent MEPs for Ireland. I certainly would know and would have worked with Grace on different issues. So I think it's important to acknowledge their work. I think you're going to see a really close fight, but I think I'm still quite optimistic that Fianna Fáil will take two seats in Ireland South, specifically to the question around by-elections.
Yeah.
I mean, my sense, I suppose, was and there was a general view we should get to the budget. I think because there is, with all of the political fractures, the last thing that you want is an election and months going on trying to form a government, and that we don't have financial certainty. So I think it is important that we have a budget and that can be delivered to the country. I think there was probably a lot of speculation and expectation we'd have an October or into early November election. Then when the changeover happened between Leo Varadkar and Simon Harris, there was this kind of sense, Simon Harris will want to make his mark. I'm a great believer in, and I'm sure, those who are out knocking on the doors, it's much better when there's light outside. Bertie Ahern always said, go for a summer election. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to get people at home. You don't want to be out in the colds and depths of late November or indeed early February.
You'd prefer to go in the autumn, basically.
I think autumn is more likely, right, or else
you'd be reasonably
confident
yourself, would you? Because the local election results in Arklow and Gorey, which would be broadly the constituency you'd be running in, went pretty well for Fianna Fáil. Did you get four councillors in that general area overall?
Six.
Six.
But it did. It did.
Who's counting, eh?
Yeah. We still lost three councillors in the area. So it was, but without looking at, and everyone obviously looks at their home turf. I think the key has to be around continuing to focus on the budget. There is a theory around, if we're going to do the by-elections, just do them now, have them in July, the same way as the Dublin Bay South by-election a couple of years ago.
Which was Labour
won. Keep us out of the sunshine. Keep us out of the sunshine.
And by the way, we haven't touched on Labour, and I think Eoin O'Riordan's success, and I congratulate Eoin, he ran a really positive campaign. Mm-hmm. And it's a very good day.
Marion Harkin,
in July, knowing that they might be out there again in the end of October or within 6 months.
The by-elections, did you see potentially five by-elections happening if you think of a cabinet member going out as European Commissioner?
That's right. Mm. I mean, I cannot see by-elections, five taking place before the general election. There's money in the coffers. They can bring in a budget that will please a lot of people and still keep a bit of money aside, you know, they can still show that they're managing the books. They have plenty of options ahead of them. And why in God's name would you risk that on five by-elections?
And we've about half a minute left, so I just want to ask you this. I know you're saying general election now, but five by-elections to chip away at the government one by one is surely a better way for Sinn Féin to go rather than a general election.
Look,
first,
it's all about the politics. And the politics is that the crisis that our communities face, housing, healthcare, community safety, crime.
But we are talking about to get to where you want to get to, you have to win an election.
But those issues remain the same. And we're thinking it's entirely up to the government, but we're saying give the people their say. Let's move on. Let's get them out and get a government in that cares for the communities, that works for the communities, that represent the communities. Because at the moment, the crises are still there. Housing, homelessness, climate change, community safety.
Okay. Well, one of
all
the
those
issues...
crises are still right, there.
We've got to take a break.
What's your policy on housing?
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.